Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This show is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you do have any comments or questions for our guests and you would like to make a call during the broadcast, you can call in at area code 646-716-4893. And if you don't want to go live on the air, you can always email any questions you have at bonkaye@aol.com. Before we begin, I just want to make the announcement that we have now sealed the deal for our Houston retreat in March on the 1st and 2nd in Houston, Texas. And I'm really excited about going and seeing my wonderful friends in Texas, reuniting with them and having women from all over the country join us in our healing weekend. The purpose of this weekend is for women to meet others who have gone through their path in life and can understand everything they're feeling. And sometimes feeling so isolated like you're the only one, this event just validates everything for you. It really helps in your path on healing so that you don't feel so stuck and for sure that you don't feel alone. So if you're interested, you can write to me at bonkaye@aol.com, and I'll definitely send you all the details as we're progressing. But once again, the Houston weekend is the 1st and the 2nd of March. Okay, so without much further ado, I want to say hello to my very important guest, John Ballou. John, welcome to our show.
Thank you, Bonnie. It's great to be here.
And it's great to have you here because I've read so many of the things that you've written and felt that you could really be instrumental to many of our listeners. So let's first talk a little bit about you and your background. And you've been practicing counseling for quite a while, correct?
Yes, I've been in private practice in Atlanta since 1987, so it's been about 26 years now.
And that's a long time. And
it is.
I will mention also that John is also gay and open about it, right, John?
Absolutely.
And, you know, you've been working with a lot of people who are involved in gay issues and relationship issues. And, you know, you grew up kind of during the time when it was really hard to be gay in many parts of the world, but especially in the South, correct?
That's very true, and also in the Midwest. I grew up in St. Louis, and it was very challenging.
And you grew up also in a religious family, so that was challenging, correct?
Yes, absolutely. I think those are exactly the issues that oftentimes lead men to either stay in the closet or to end up in marriages that perhaps they didn't intend to get into.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it was interesting. We were talking about something in our chat room earlier this evening, and I would just like your input on this because you've had so much experience in working with people, and we specifically are talking about, you know, gay men who get married. But for those gay men who get married, you know, people have this really distorted view of what the whole situation's about. They think, how could they have been gay if they got married to you? So if they were married to you, I mean, that's when they came out being gay because you probably just weren't a good enough wife for making them stay straight. And I know that's hard for you to believe that people are so ignorant in today's world, but they really are. And this is always comes up as a question. So we were talking about when do men actually know that they're gay? And not to say that they can say that word G-A-Y, but as far as knowing that they have same-sex attractions, what would you say?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I have talked to some men who say they knew that they were gay from the time they were 5 years old, that they knew instantly, that there was never even a question of coming out of the closet because they were never in. On the other hand, I've talked to other men who ended up coming out well into their 70s, who grew up in a time when being gay was seen as so alien that they absolutely couldn't identify with the term. And so they it wasn't so much a matter of suppressing it in some ways as just seeing it so alien that it couldn't possibly describe who they are. So it took a lot of time. I think it's hard for us to sometimes remember that we've not always lived in 2013. I mean, we're going through a time of rapid social change, but it wasn't that many years ago that things were very, very different for us. So, that's a big part of the story.
But even though they may be, as far as not dealing with their feelings, as you say, men try to really suppress them, because there were so many obstacles and also penalties for being gay, you know, throughout time up until recently, and it's still not over. I mean, it's still far from being resolved as far as being free, you know, equal, and I don't know if it ever will be because of religion. But, you know, things are definitely getting better. I mean, certainly they're better than, you know, 25, 30, 40 years ago. People have come a long way. But on the other hand, I don't think people today have to, you know, deny it quite as deeply to themselves because there's so much information. I'm sure when you were growing up, there wasn't that much information. Well, I shouldn't assume that.
No. There's very little information.
I don't know how old you are, John, so maybe there was.
You look in your
picture like you're 30, but, you know, maybe
Oh, bless your heart. It's I'm actually 59, so I've been around the block a while, you know. But I think you're right. There was almost no information back then.
And especially where you lived. I mean, you weren't in a progressive city at that time, right?
No, you're absolutely right. But when I've talked to people who grew up even in places like New York or San Francisco, they find that it's not necessarily uniformly progressive, and that there are still plenty of ways that people can end up feeling alienated from themselves.
Absolutely.
Thankfully,
but I think there was just little knowledge back then. You know, I know that I'm 2 or 3 years older than you, so we kind of grew up around the same time.
Yeah,
and
contemporary.
Thank you, John. But I always think everybody's younger than me now. But the thing is that when I was growing up, when I look back, and I grew up in the suburbs of Philadelphia, so it wasn't in the mainstream city of Philadelphia. It was outside in the suburbs. And so maybe values are a little off. But what we saw, we never heard the word gay. I mean, it was never discussed. I didn't know anybody who was gay except for a couple of guys who people made fun of and calling them names, you know, like they're a sissy or, you know, they're like a girl. But nobody ever came right out and said gay. I mean, that or homosexual. Those were not terms that I heard used. And I did read about it a couple times, like in novels, you know, so it wasn't like, but it was so isolated that that's the most I ever knew about it until I moved out to California in the late 1960s, and then everything changed. Everything changed in certain parts of the country, not everywhere.
Yeah.
But at least you were hearing a little more about it. At least you were seeing a little more of it, even in progressive cities. So at least maybe there was a connection kind of thing. Where when you were growing up, did you feel really isolated?
I felt completely isolated. I was a very religious, in a very religious family, and I was always a good kid and a kind of boy that other parents wanted their sons to be around and so on. And so when the only images of gay people around were very much in the shadows, it was really something I certainly never identified with. I remember, this will definitely date me, there was a show on TV called Marcus Welby, M.D.
I love that
Robert
show.
Young, and it's a great show, right? But they had this, they mentioned homosexuality once in, I guess this is probably 1972, in an episode called The Outrage. And it was all about, as I recall, about a pedophile, I forget if there was a teacher or a coach or something like that. But, you know, when you're a kid and you're looking at these kinds of images, these are not the kinds of things that you identify with. In the same way that if the only images that you would see presented in news clips about gay pride parades are the most outrageous-looking people and drag queens and people are very flamboyant, not that there's anything wrong with that, but that's not necessarily what we would identify with, certainly not what I identified with as a kid from the Midwest. That seemed very alien to me and like it couldn't possibly be me.
Right. And yet back in those days, you know, when we were growing up, I think that was pretty much the only imagery I had of, you know, homosexuality. And in fact, like you would see on shows like Milton Berle, he would dress up like a woman, you know, so it was funny. But when you would see other movies that even referred to it with flamboyant men involved, you know, it was totally, like you said, not something that you didn't identify with, but the general
right.
public looked at that as that's what homosexuality is, which is why I guess we weren't able to identify a lot of the men who we married as being gay because we didn't even understand what gay was.
Well, and there were so few images of gay people, and the ones that were held up to ridicule. So if you were a gay man who wasn't interested in dressing up in drag like Milton Berle, then you would think, well, that image has nothing to do with me. I'm looking at pictures of guys, but that doesn't mean that I'm that way. And that's very confusing to people.
And I think back then, if people were having gay relationships, you know, which were pretty quiet, but every blue moon when you would hear one, there was a lot of this role-playing, who's the man, who's the woman. Do you remember
right.
that?
Oh, absolutely. It was a very primitive understanding of human relationships, no doubt about it. And that had the effect of keeping a lot of men in the closet, I think.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm just curious. We never really discussed this on the show before, but since you are, you know, counselor and male, I'm always wondering why is it some men are able to get married and perform heterosexually for a while, where other men, there's no way you could put a gun to their head and it would never happen.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think sexuality is very complex. One variable that doesn't get looked at oftentimes is how much sex drive do the partners have. If you have a husband who is mostly same-sex attracted but who has a very high sex drive and perhaps a wife who has a relatively low sex drive, then she may be totally satisfied by him sexually for quite a while because her needs are getting fulfilled. He has sufficient drive to perform sexually, even with somebody who's not necessarily his preferred gender choice. But he's channeling that energy. And of course, if it's a situation where he really loves his wife, then he may find it much easier to channel the energy her way, at least for a while. Now, a while can be a few months for some men and years for others. So, you know, I think there really is a difference. There's also a question about to what extent do men allow themselves to have fantasies? If being gay is seen as so alien that even having fantasies about other men is so threatening that it's suppressed, then all of that energy is going to probably be channeled to the only outlet that's available. And I hate to describe a loving relationship in terms of just sexual outlets, but, you know, when we're talking about desire, that may be getting channeled towards the spouse indefinitely. For other men, that's just not an issue. And there's also the issue of the complexity of how we look at orientation. Some men have lots of sexual fantasies, other men not so much. You know, it's really hard to say without talking about the specific people involved. There's a lot of variability from couple to couple when it comes to sexual expression, certainly.
Certainly, and that is true. I know that, however, for the majority of women that I've worked through the years, you know, a lot of them have never had really other sexual experiences, so they don't have a lot to go on. But they still know that something's not quite right and something's missing, that there's some kind of skip the beat there, even when they are, you know, having sex with their husbands. And I think the major part is just that. They're having sex with their husbands, but not necessarily making love with their husbands. Like, their mm-hmm. husbands are trying their best to do whatever they can to convince her, the wife or himself, you know, that he can do this and he can right. not have to act on being gay. And as I tell my women and tell it to people repeatedly, especially, you know, when people listen on this show, it's my contention that these men, for the most part, 95%, 96%, for the most part, do not go into these marriages trying to trick a woman or because they don't love you, but they want to use you for a cover. You know, I really do believe in my heart they do love the women that they marry. And mm-hmm. I do believe that they are hoping against hope that those feelings will just go away and never come back if they love you enough. And in their desire that not to be gay because they don't want to be gay, that, you know, they really do believe that they can do this, and they try. And, you know, some try for a while, some try for less time, some think, you know, are able to compartmentalize enough where they're sure that they're not gay, and if they have to act once in a while on an urge, it's not really gay anyway. You know, mm-hmm. it's all different levels of denial or hope that this will work out. And I understand that more than anyone. You know, it's not like I blame men at this point. You know, sure. because a lot of men really do believe that they can make that change if they love you enough. My issue is when they can't control it anymore, when they have to start acting on it. And, mm-hmm. you know, they're unhappy in their relationships because they're in a relationship where they don't belong to start with. You know, it's not natural for a gay man to be married to a woman. He's right. a gay man. He needs to be with a gay man. So now all of a sudden he's in a situation, sometimes he has a child or two or three, and he's not happy because he knows that something, you know, he's forcing himself to be somewhere where he doesn't belong. So I think that's mm-hmm. where all the problems really start. You know, then he says, well, I'll go outside. She won't know what I'm doing. I don't want to hurt her. I love her too much. I don't want her to find out, but I'll just do this or that. And, you know, there's all kinds of justifications along the way, but it really does impact on that woman when she knows that her husband really doesn't want her. And I don't think these guys get it. You know, they think that, you know, I hear so many times, well, I've been a good husband. You know, yeah. from their point of view, they have been a good husband. But being a good husband is more than putting a roof under somebody's head. I mean, that's not what marriage is supposed to be about. Do you agree with that?
Right. Well, that's a pretty limited view of masculinity and the masculine role in a relationship, in a heterosexual relationship, that it's just about providing food and shelter. Mm-hmm. I think there's really the whole question of intimacy and authenticity in the relationship. And certainly if the relationship is understood to be monogamous and the husband is stepping out on the wife, then she's going to experience that as a big betrayal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the facade begins to unravel, I think.
I think so in a lot of cases. And yet, you know, if you would hear some of the things, reasons they justify it, you know, well, it's not really cheating because, you know, I don't have any kind of emotional connection. Or it's not really cheating
right.
because it's with a man and not another woman. Or it's mm-hmm. not really cheating because, you know, I wasn't kissing the guy. Or I was just
right.
touching the guy. It wasn't real sex. It was just fondling. How
yeah.
do you respond to that?
Well, you know, those are all rationalizations. We can always rationalize just about anything. Human beings
mm-hmm.
are very good at rationalizing. The question becomes, does your wife have the same understanding of this as you? If the husband and the wife both have an understanding that the relationship is somewhat open in some ways and that this behavior is permissible, so there's no secret and there's no betrayal, that's one thing. But that I find that that's rarely the case in the relationships that we're talking about. If it's something that you have to keep secret, then that becomes a problem. Keeping a secret from your spouse is different than just keeping something private.
Mm-hmm. And how about, you know, at some point when you're dealing with men who are in this situation, you know, when they tell you, well, you know, why is sex such a big deal? I mean, that's what they say to me. You know, my wife's making such a big deal over sex. Why is sex always such an important, you know, issue? Like, a lot of men don't understand this.
Right.
Maybe you could explain that.
You know, I think it's true that that's what people say sometimes. But then, you know, you could also turn that around and say, well, if sex is not that big a deal, then why is it important for you to have sex outside the relationship? You know, the truth is that sex and intimacy are deeply interconnected. And in a committed relationship, especially a relationship that's understood to be monogamous, then this sort of basically deceiving a partner is going to be, that's really what the problem is. It's the deception. In a lot of ways, these men may be right that sex is not all that different than other kinds of secrets. But if it's a secret that you're keeping from your partner, that she's going to be feeling completely deceived about, then that's the issue. You know, if he was dealing with an addiction issue or with financial problems and not sharing sharing that information with his wife, then that might be, she might feel that that's an equivalent kind of deception if it's really threatening her security. So it's the deception that I think is the problem. It's not the sex per se.
I think in a lot of these marriages, because, you know, I couldn't pretend to be a lesbian. I mean, maybe I could pretend, and like on a superficial level, but I'm not, and I just wouldn't understand how to be. And I think that even though I have women friends who I love, I just don't want to have sex with them. So if I had to, I think in time, I would be like a lot of these men are. I'd be looking for a million reasons why I can't. I'd have a headache, a toothache, a backache. You know, it's not something that's natural for me to do, and it's no reflection on my love for my friends. It's just my sexual orientation. And I do still think that sex makes a major difference in any relationship because, as you were saying earlier, it does build towards intimacy. I just, you know, I think what these guys you know, have told me so many times, well, in straight marriages, you know, they don't have sex when they, you know, after they're together for, you know, a while either. But what they don't understand is that sex is a natural part of a relationship, and that's not to say it may get lesser as you get, you know, more years you're involved because other things come up, families, jobs, pressures.
Sure.
But you've had the intimacy to build on through all those beginning years. And you've had, you know, a comfortable sex life throughout, you know, maybe crises come up, but when they're resolved, you go back to it because sex is a natural part of living, especially for couples who love each other. So I think this is where, you know, some of their thinking is a little skewed and off or justifiable, as you say. But one of the things I would like to ask your opinion on, because this is always very controversial and you've been working with this for so long, how much does abuse contribute to sexual orientation?
Well, you know, I think that it oftentimes clouds sexual orientation. I've certainly worked with a number of men who whose coming out was delayed because they had a sexual abuse experience early on, and they felt like their attraction to men was just evidence that they had been damaged by their victimizer. So, you know, I think that in that way they may fight against identifying as gay out of confusion about that. That's one of the most pernicious effects of abuse. But I think in terms of how sexual orientation is affected by abuse, it's I don't think there's any evidence that it is. Now, some men who are heterosexual may end up having sex with men as a way of sort of recreating that abuse, a kind of a repetition compulsion. I think that that happens sometimes. But it's not a matter of orientation. It's a matter of behavior. There are circumstances under which men who are primarily heterosexual will end up having sex with men, sometimes because male partners are more available, sometimes because there's been an issue of abuse in the past, sometimes, as you're saying earlier, because they can rationalize that, well, it's not really betrayal, it's not really infidelity if I'm having sex with somebody who's not a woman. So there are reasons besides gay sexual orientation that a man might end up being sexual outside of his relationship, outside of his marriage. I'm not sure how much that matters from the standpoint of being married to a man in this situation, because the issue of the betrayal and the deceit is going to be the same one.
You know,
does that make sense?
A little bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can understand where you're coming from. I just feel that mm-hmm. people's sexual orientation is predetermined. I don't think that you can really change that once they're here. And that's not to say that there are certain circumstances, such as when men are in prison, you know, where they will have sex even if their sexual orientation is not homosexual. You know, I mm-hmm. think there's all different kinds of circumstances that I call, you know, on the outside border there. For instance, like power differentials, you know, between, you know, a teacher and a student or a doctor and a patient. I mean, I've seen people whose sexual orientation is definitely not gay do things because, you know, of a power situation or, you know, like I say, some bizarre kind of circumstance. But that doesn't, I don't think that would necessarily, you know, happen that often unless somebody has a gay or, you know, who has a gay orientation. I really don't.
It's one of those things where it's really hard to know because there's not a lot of research on this, but you know, I think certainly from the standpoint of a relationship, it's going to be behavior that damages a relationship or makes it impossible.
Right, and you know, like I say, there's a lot of, you know, things that are on the gray borderlines of sexuality. You know, there's not answers for everything. I just go for mm-hmm. the general majority of consensus. There's always an exception to every rule.
Yeah.
I just had a note come in from one of our listeners who's listening right now, and she asked me if I'd be kind enough to ask you a question.
Sure.
She said, can you ask John to discuss what if her husband is self-pleasuring to gay porn throughout the marriage but not having sex with men?
Mm-hmm. And is there a question there?
Yes. Is that considered, you know, because her husband's denying that, you know, he has a gay orientation. He said just because he, you know, masturbates to gay porn all the time, and that doesn't mean that he's gay.
Well, it certainly suggests that his fantasy life is gay. Sexual orientation is complicated. His expressed sexual behavior may not be gay, but clearly mm-hmm. some of his fantasies, his interior fantasy life is certainly gay.
Because it's not like some of these men are having sex with their wives while they're doing this. You know, they're saying, but uh-huh. it's not really gay because I'm not out there doing anything. I'm just, you know, masturbating to pornography. That doesn't make me gay.
You know, one of my favorite sayings is that every explanation should be made as simple as possible, but no simpler. And mm-hmm. I think when it comes to sexual orientation, it's possible to oversimplify things. I mean, it used to be that there was no word for called homosexual or heterosexual because everybody was assumed to be the same, which mm-hmm. is kind of normal. And then I think it was in 1869, a German researcher coined this term homosexual to describe someone whose orientation was really towards someone of the same sex. Mm-hmm. And so then we created this kind of dichotomy that people were either homosexual or heterosexual. Then mm-hmm. In the 40s and the 50s, at the Kinsey Institute, they created this six-point scale that was more descriptive of of people's experience. Now, though, what we're finding is people's sexual orientation can be, their fantasy life may not line up completely with their behavior. They may have, you can understand sexual orientation to be, in a lot of ways, more complex. It involves things like, who are you attracted to? Who do you notice when you're on the beach? If you're on a beach on a sunny day and you see people in bikinis, are you attracted to this? Does your eye go to the women in the bikinis or to the men in the bikinis? You know, who do you have sexual behavior with? You know, the actual acts of sex. Then also, where do fantasies fit into this? If somebody is exclusively heterosexual in terms of his expressed behavior, but while he's engaging in sex with his wife, he's fantasizing about men as a way, right, perhaps, of sustaining sex, then that certainly gets figured into this. There are also issues about, you know, how does somebody identify? Some people clearly are more comfortable with one identity than the other, and there's a whole issue of bisexuality, which I know my sense is you've got a lot of opinions about, sort of fits in there. Bisexuality is such a broad term that it can mean almost anything, it seems like, depending on who's using the term. So, you know, I think it's really important to understand that this is not just an either-or kind of phenomenon. The question I would have, I guess, for the woman who wrote in is, how is the quality of her relationship with her husband in general? How's sexual intimacy?
Well, it was good, but there's just no intimacy there. He's not interested in intimacy with her. So, well, to me, if you're not interested, you know, she's a beautiful woman. You know, she was an excellent wife, but he's just not into having sex with her. And she feels that if he's not making love to her and the only time he's having sex is with looking at, you know, gay porn. And I really do believe in my heart that, you know, that he goes on a lot of trips, that he's probably acting on that while he's on those trips.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I believe that men are sexual and they're getting sex somewhere. So I always tell women, don't be naive. You know, some women think, well, he's with me all the time. No, he's not with you all the time. And, you know, there are places you can go to a bathroom and have the sexual encounter. I have guys who've had it in dressing rooms and, like, Macy's. You know, it only takes a moment. So, you know, I feel that if you're – I'm not quite sure. Like, a man wrote to me this week, and he said to me, can you please help me with my identity, which I told him I really can't because, you know, certain things I don't – you know, I told him to go to a therapist. He said that he's only aroused by male fantasies. He never thinks about women in his fantasies. But he's only had sex with men once. And although it was very exciting, he actually has sex with women, but he can't have an orgasm unless he's thinking about a man and fantasizing about a man. So I don't know what to say. I mean, you know, I think he's more in denial than anything else, that if you have to only watch gay porn, only have gay fantasies, and you can't have a climax with a woman unless you're thinking of a man, I don't think that's straight.
Yeah, I would say that it doesn't look very straight, does it? You know,
well, that's part of my new terminology now, John, because, you know, now I've eliminated everything. You know, before I used to have to argue my point about bisexuality, because I believe that's the, you know, ladder to homosexuality when you don't want to be called gay. I had to argue about asexual, bisexual, confused sexual, you know, metrosexual, anything that doesn't have a hetero in front of it. So I just decided now it's just easier. I changed the whole terminology 2 months ago. Now I'm calling it non-straight behavior.
Non-straight behavior. Well, that may make a lot of sense in the context in which we're talking about here in terms of heterosexually married men. You know, I think from the standpoint of being a therapist, what I would do with somebody like this is sit down and talk with them and realize there's no time limit on how people reach a decision about themselves. What we want to do is look at what's getting in the way. what messages have they heard about sex that maybe complicate things? How do they feel about sex in general? With a lot of these men, the messages they've gotten about sex have been so negative that sorting out their attraction is can only be done when they've started to sort out their attitudes towards sexuality and intimacy in general, because sex as a whole just seems kind of nasty to them. So, or they've been raised with the belief that sex is somehow filthy and disgusting, but you should save it for the one you love. I mean, uh-huh. We grow up with these kind of messages, and they're so conflicted that those really need to be sorted out along with understanding sexual orientation. And that takes patience. And if somebody's in a crisis in their marriage, it's really hard to take the time to be patient. But I don't think there's any substitute for it, really.
No, I agree with you. And I think that I feel so bad for women who stay in marriages for 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years who have never had a fulfilling relationship and always felt guilty or, you know, being blamed for the lack of, you know, success in the marriage. You know, I feel like, you know, I'm working with the damage that's done. And although I do understand, you know, like I say, when men go into marriages, I am sympathetic, and I tell that to all of them. But there comes a point where you have to be honest about it. You know, like some men say, John, when they're leaving, they say to me, well, do I really have to tell her the truth? You know, why does she have to know? So I'd like you to respond. What would you tell a guy who says that to you?
Well, you know, I would want to talk with them about why are they not saying that? Why are they not telling the truth? Are they somehow giving their soon-to-be ex-wife a sense that she has somehow failed in this relationship in a way that she really has not? That this is really a decision that that he's making because of his understanding of himself. There's also a matter of if you're forming a new identity or a new sense of yourself, a new life as an out gay man, and if one of your goals is to have a healthy mutual relationship with another man, then how do you do that when you've got this unfinished business in the past? And that sort of unfinished business oftentimes ends up coming back to haunt us. Now, there are some circumstances where self-disclosure may not be the best course, but those are few and far between. You know, if there's an instance where it's likely to lead to violence, for instance, I think that's something that I would be concerned about. If there was an issue where it was likely to affect custody of children, then that would be an issue where I would say we need to really think this through long and hard and not jump to a conclusion. It's important not to come up with one-size-fits-all solutions when life can be so complicated. But having said that, I think certainly if you're going to be happier in life if you have a life of authenticity and integrity. And authenticity and integrity require being authentic and honest in our intimate relationships.
And
so honesty really is the best policy.
You're right, and as long as you're on that topic, my points of view have drastically changed in, you know, the last few years as far as how to approach the children in these marriages.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, for many years, like 25 of them or 26 of them, I took the point of view that telling the children depends on so many different issues, like, for instance, where you live, what the ages of the children are. Sometimes, you know, they learn it early on, it's better, so they're not shocked into teenage years when they then have to question their own sexuality. You know, I used to think that, you know, sometimes they don't have to know when they're growing up, sometimes they shouldn't know. I've changed my view on everything in the last couple of years, and I now believe that children need to know this. And I'm going to tell you my reasons and tell me if you know, agree with this. First of all, by keeping homosexuality a secret, That's even perpetuating the myth more and more that something's wrong with it. And I have seen secrets tear apart families so badly. And I work with a group now called Adult Children of Gay Fathers. And these were kids who were never told when they were younger, but they did find this out on their own before their mothers even knew. You know, kids today are so sophisticated. They're on the computers all the time. So a lot of them would find gay porno on their dad's, you know, computer or instant messages with boys or men or whatever the applications were, gay dating services, you know, Adam to Adam, you know, whatever the case was. And now all of a sudden they became the keepers of the secret. And this really tore them apart because of the fact that, you know, they didn't want to tell their mothers, they didn't want to break up the marriage. You know, some of them told their fathers, and the fathers would say, well, if you tell your mother, the marriage will break up, you know, then she'll be miserable. So, you know, they live through adulthood feeling guilty, anxiety. You know, children know when a marriage isn't right. And I really do believe when they see this kind of, you know, children mirror their parents' actions. So they see unhealthy marriages where there's no intimacy, no caring, no holding, no love. Many of them are really confused when they have to have relationships of their own, what the guidelines should be. But more importantly, when they do find out, a lot of times they start thinking, well, if they kept that a secret from me, what else are they keeping a secret from me? So there's so many trust issues that have come up when they're older that I really do believe now that there's all different, you know, age-appropriate ways to tell children. But I think that by keeping it a secret, it's really doing more harm than people really understand. So that's where I'm coming from now. What are your thoughts on that?
I would agree with you. I think that it's important if the kids are going to have a real relationship with both of their parents, that their parents be honest with them and authentic with them. Now, having said that, there are several different concerns I've got. One is, in any kind of disclosure, the primary concern needs to be the welfare of the kids involved, not either the father's need to suddenly be proclaim who he is from the rooftops, or the wife's desire to somehow lay all of this at her husband's feet in a way that feels, frankly, like using it as a weapon, because those kinds of things are going to be unhealthy and are going to damage the kids. Also, I would be reluctant to tell kids if information that they're not ready for. If when you've got kids who are going through adolescence, some kids do that really well. Other kids really struggle. And if that's going to be a situation where this is going to be either more burdensome or it's going to be disclosed at a time when the kids aren't necessarily going to have the emotional resources that they need to sort through all of this, then delaying that until later might be a good idea. You know, it's so the age of the kids is going to be one factor. That I think it's also going to be there's a concern about where's the level of conflict between the parents. If this becomes something that really feels like the reason why mommy is so angry at daddy, then that's going to affect how they understand all of this. You know, lots of times things in life are just not fair, and this is oftentimes one of those times. A wife may need to be much more generous to her husband in terms of managing her disclosure to kids than she might feel is fair. She may need to be more charitable towards her husband than she feels is fair, but that may be what's best for the kids.
Well, see, my concern with that is that I have a number of women who have kept this secret, and yet they're getting a divorce, and the husbands are angry because they don't want the divorce. They want to keep the marriage going, even though there's no marriage. They want to keep the family unit together for whatever their personal reasons. So I have a number of women whose husbands will tell the kids, well, I didn't want to get a divorce. It's your mother. I'm not the one breaking up the family. It's your mother. So now all of a sudden, the finger gets pointed to the mother as being the cause, and the children have resentment towards the parents, towards their mother. And, I mean, I think that's really unfair.
Oh, it's totally unfair. In that kind of a case, put yourself in the position of the kids.
Right.
They're just in an untenable situation. They're going to need lots of help in sorting this through. It's going to be a high-conflict situation, which we know sometimes happens when marriages end. But that's going to, I don't know whether I call that a worst-case scenario, but pretty close. It's going to be hard for the kids not to be injured in that process.
That's why I think that, here's another issue I have. I have kids who are gay kids, and they're afraid to come out, because they're suffering themselves, and if they get the message that there's something wrong with homosexuality, how are they going to feel about themselves? I think that, homosexuality, you may not agree with me, I really do believe it's genetic. I don't see it isolated anywhere. There's always, you find somebody who's gay, there's somebody else gay in the family, not too far away. And I think that people suffer all the time by thinking that they're not trying hard enough not to be gay, that, they wouldn't have to be gay if there was something, unless there's something wrong with them. I think if they have an understanding, because most of the, I would say about 20% of the people who are part of my network have gay children, and including me. I had a lesbian daughter who unfortunately passed away. But, she had a gay father, and I said to her, look, this is something that happens. It's not a fault. It's something that's predisposed. You don't have a choice in it. You're born this way. So at least it took some of the pressure off of her of feeling like she's not trying hard enough. I think that, if we're ever going to change attitudes about gay, it has to start at home. And
I totally agree with you. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, in general, I think that coming out is what has changed attitudes towards homosexuality over the course of the past 30 or 40 years. It's people understanding that people that they love are gay, that gay people are not all, very alien creatures. I think that when it comes to families, this becomes especially complicated, though, sometimes. What we know is secrets in families almost always lead to dysfunction. So I think that if you've got a family that's keeping secrets like this, they are really in a bind, and they need to find a way out. Ideally, they're going to find a way out where both parents work together as a team to do what's best for the kids. But if they, in some cases, we know one parent or the other either chooses not to do that or just isn't able to, then the other parent needs to really step up and get the kids the support they need to work through these difficult experiences.
Yeah, I mean, there's no easy answers. There's so many complexities, everywhere. And even, I do every now and then have someone who comes to me who has, a spouse, someone's now is transgender and they're having operations, to become another sex and, they want the wife to stay with them. It's not like, there's so many complications.
Yep. Life is very complicated. And I can understand, that makes me very sympathetic to people who want to just put their foot down and say, no, this is not what I signed up for. I mean, what we know is marriages are complicated enough, even without tossing in these additional curveballs. So I can certainly understand people feeling like this is just not fair. They find themselves feeling resentful. That makes complete sense to me.
Right, and it's pretty much what you just said. I have each month with us Dr. Brian Hooper. He does, co-hosts the show with me once a month at the end of the month, and he's a therapist in Tennessee. And, a gay therapist who's very comfortable with himself and, has been. you know, from like you. And he always says to the women, you know, it's not a matter of, you know, you have to stay with somebody through thick and thin of their sickness and health, you know, and feel that you made a commitment. He said, if this is not what you signed up for, you don't have to feel guilty about leaving it. You know, this is not what you were expecting out of marriage. You wanted a husband who could love you and treat you with the same kind of love and respect. And my mantra that I tell everybody is life was not meant to be this complicated, period. You know, people make mistakes, but the great thing about a mistake is that you can fix it. You can remedy it. It's not like it's a life sentence. You can change it.
Right.
And you don't have to stay with it forever or feel guilty about it. Do you agree with
that? That's absolutely true. I think what sometimes prevents us from doing that is a belief that life should be fair or life should be easy, and that we shouldn't have to face these difficult things. We shouldn't have to face the hardship of coming out. We shouldn't have to face the pain of a marriage ending. But the truth is that sometimes that does need to be considered if we're going to lead a genuine life.
Mm-hmm. Life talk about that a little bit, John, about leading a genuine life, the importance of that.
It's each of us is unique. And I think one of the things that makes me hopeful at this point in human history is we seem to be growing in our appreciation for that, that it's not that there's just one way to be a good person or a real person or a successful person, that really success and health comes from leading your life the way you want to, the way that really feels right to you. I think it was Freud who said, when somebody asked him to define mental health, he said it was the ability to work and to love. And so I think that when we're doing things that keep us, that get in the way of us being able to be our most authentic self, that we need to really take a look at what is the cause of that. And we need to be courageous. We need to be willing enough to be heroes in our own life, doing something sometimes that nobody else would support, if that's what it takes to face up to being authentic and being genuine in in our lives, to really be the person that we're called to be. This is certainly the experience of a lot of gay men in coming out, especially in the past. Now I think it's also the experience of maybe the experience of these straight spouses in relationships like this, where the need is to for both people to look at what does it mean to be real, to be genuine, to be my best self, to have the best life I can have, not just from the standpoint of, not from a narcissistic place that's all about self-aggrandizement, but from a sense of what's my real purpose in life? What am I about? And that we need to be able to look at that with a certain fearlessness. And that's especially true when we're looking at making decisions that we know are going to disappoint another person, or that are going to cause us embarrassment, or to face up to moments of shame. Shame is one of those things that when we're experiencing it in life, it's hard to experience anything else. The shame just sort of takes over. And we have to root that out if we're going to be healthy people.
And I think you're absolutely right. You know, I think once you can live an authentic life that's yours, you know, it changes who you are. And not having to look over your shoulder, you know, not having to worry who's going to catch you when. You know, living a lie has to be, to me, the most debilitating thing in the world. And I just cannot imagine every day of my life waking up knowing what steps do I have to cover today, what tracks, you know, What facial movement do I make? What I don't make? You know, I just can't imagine having to live like that day in and day out. And
yeah.
You know, I just feel that everybody suffers. You know, the wife, I'm certainly, you know, that's my primary concern, goes through life living a lie with her husband, thinking she's to blame for all the problems in the marriage because that's what he's telling her. You know, he doesn't
yeah.
want to take responsibility for the fact that it's homosexuality that's the problem in the marriage. It doesn't belong there. And if you truly love somebody, when you leave, you have to be, I tell my men that come to me, you have to be emotionally and financially responsible. You know, I don't blame you that it was your fault you went into this marriage. You hoped things would work out. But when they didn't, you know, don't double whammy your wife, you know, or double
right.
fling this here. Do the right thing. Be honest. Tell her the truth. Don't make her feel she's the one who's responsible. Because, you know, I think that what men fail to realize is that, you know, when they, and I tell this to my women, when marriages, it may, you know, it takes two to make a marriage, but in these marriages, it doesn't take two. Because you can be the best wife in the world. I always feel like our wives are the best wives because we always keep trying harder and harder to make something work that can't.
Mm.
You know, it's not going to be that, you know, it's your fault that the marriage is failing. You can't take responsibility if your husband's gay. And at the same time, the husband cannot sit there saying, well, the marriage would have worked out if she would clean the house better, if she was, you know, a better cook, if she lost more weight. No, that has nothing to do with why the marriage failed. Take responsibility.
Right.
You're a gay man. Go with it. Be good to your family. And also another big thing, I don't know if you would agree with this, you know, communication is so important when you have children. If you don't have children, you can break up that marriage and move on. You know, you don't have to be friends for life. You can start, you know,
mm-hmm.
if it was a mistake, you can fix it and move on. You know, you can both find your new soulmates and go out there and, you know, have a life for yourselves. But when you have children, you are tied together for life.
Yes.
Or for a long time, at least. You know, even through grandchildren when your children grow up. You know, you're going to have to see each other. You're going to have to deal with it. You know, so I think it's really important for men to understand this. You just can't walk away and shouldn't just walk away. Try to do the right thing. And I think where I guess my biggest thing is that a lot of the men that we deal with, you know, they think that in if 2 or 3 or 4 weeks or 4 months that their wives should be fine. Like, why aren't they getting over this already? They don't understand
yeah.
that, you know, they've struggled with this for their whole life. Then they
right.
come in, and they drop a bombshell. Okay, I'm gay. Okay, you should appreciate the fact I'm being honest. Yes, we do appreciate that fact, but it's not going to take 2 weeks to get over it.
Right.
When you've been married for 10, 20, 30, 40 years, and now all of a sudden it's over. Am I right on that one?
Oh, that's absolutely true. Even if this is something that the gay man has been suppressing, he's been processing it at some level, maybe for
uh-huh.
decades. And,
uh-huh.
You know, the wife is suddenly in a position where she's got to play catch-up with this, and that could take a long time. Plus, doing it under duress, doing this in a situation that's the most stressful one imaginable, really, to try to catch up and figure this out. So one of the things I always talk about with men in this situation is it's really important to be patient and to realize that people sometimes say hurtful things in the heat of the moment, and
mm-hmm.
It's good to be patient with people and give everybody a second chance. But if you're a man in this situation, you are going to be happy in the long run, and everybody, it's going to be best for everybody if you clean up your mess.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I can't
important.
Thank you, John, for all of your wonderful, wonderful thoughts tonight. You know, it's really wonderful, you know, that you just have a wonderful point of view and you're so comforting. I want to let people know that you have, you know, practice in Atlanta and for men and women, not just for gay people, for everybody,
absolutely.
For families, for any kind of problems you're dealing with. I mean, we were talking tonight about the gay issue because I know that you do have so much experience with that. But you're so comforting for anyone, so any problems that you're having, you know, I would feel very confident going to you, and I'm sure our people will. But for our women who
thank
are
you.
In the area also, you know, when your husbands need a therapist or they need counseling and you're in this area, this is the man to go to. But if you're not in this area, you can still go to him, right? You can go to him on Skype, right?
I work with people selectively on Skype. It's not always a good fit for everybody, but certainly if I think that I can be helpful to people, I'll do my best.
Yes, and I would like to let people know that on the gayhusbands.com website, you'll see under coaching and therapy help for gay men, right under Dr. Brian Hooper. Now John is listed there as our go-to person also. And so please take advantage of the fact that he has this knowledge and experience, and he has a wonderful calming effect. You know, you're really wonderful as far as, you know, everything you say. And I appreciate it. I'm hoping that you'll be willing to come back and join us again, maybe on a quarterly basis. That would be okay.
Sure. I'd be delighted to. You know, if people want to go to my website, too, I've got about dozens of articles about relationships and sexuality and lots of different kinds of things that strike my fantasy, and I write a blog as well, and I certainly welcome people's thoughts and comments. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you and be happy to do that again, Bonnie.
Yeah, and I appreciate it too, John, because once again, there's so many good things on your blog. You know, I keep up on it and I do read it, you know, ever since I found it. And I just enjoy reading it. And, you know, there's so much information in it. We always say we can never have enough information, and that's why having something like this is really wonderful as a resource. So thank you so much, and I'll look forward to talking to you again at the beginning of the year sometime.
Great.
All right. Thanks so much, John. And to all our listeners, I hope you have a wonderful week, and we'll be back again with you next Sunday night. All right. Good night, John, and good night all of our listeners. Bye-bye.